What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Hello, Sherlyn. Welcome to 2024. How are you doing?
I mean, what was it like in the first minute there was a tsunami or an earthquake or something? It was great.
Multiple earthquakes, extremely high waves across the West Coast. Things were real bad. And yeah, earthquake and... Okay. I will take those as good signs. Good signs for the rest of the year, everybody. And we will be diving into what is it today? Like, it's CES is almost beginning. We are in the midst of publishing CES news. CES officially kicks off next week. So in this episode, we'll talk about some of that stuff and what we're going to expect. Also, we didn't have an episode last week, so let's wrap up some of the best and worst things we saw and encountered in 2023. Mm-hmm. We're a bit looking forward and looking back. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. That's super helpful. And drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. So let's kick off. Let's look forward immediately, I guess. Mm-hmm. CES 2024 is upon us. Sherlyn and I and the rest of the Engadget team have been doing a lot of prep work ahead of this. And now the embargoes are rolling out. The news is rolling out. But on a broad level, Sherlyn, I did want to ask, like, what are you expecting from CES this year? You're going in person. I'm going to be covering remotely. What are you excited to see?
Yeah, so there's a few of us that are going in person. And I think I want to start by broadly talking about CES as a show, you know, since the pandemic, especially. I think it sounds like a much less exciting year this year. It sounds like people still don't quite know what we want to do regarding CES, right? I mean, I think before the pandemic, you had like huge excitement around CES every year and this huge anticipation that we're going to be swamped. Google goes in and has this huge playground of a booth, and Samsung had their like VR rides and roller coaster type things, the simulator rides with the VR headsets. And LG had their wall caves, right? And TV
wall caves.
And those are so nice. And I don't know that there's going to be, like, then the pandemic hit, and then the first two after the pandemic were a little smaller in scale. And
a lot smaller. Like, we didn't go the first couple of years, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we did, like, I think one year we, like, skipped entirely. Well, we didn't go at all. And then another year we also didn't go at all. And then, like, now, right? Like, we're starting to go again. And I don't know what to expect on that front, right? How big of it? How much fun is it? I will say that I expect to spend some time at the Sphere, which will be my first time seeing it in person, which will be, I think I expect a lot of companies to make full use of this new like arena.
Is anybody announcing anything at the Sphere, I guess?
Like, I don't know that I can say anything. Okay. But I expect
I do feel like, listen, if you are a big company that wants to like show off how cool you are and how much money you have, the Sphere is probably a really cool venue.
Yeah,
but are you going to check out the U2 show as well, Sherlyn?
I don't think U2 is showing at the Sphere while we're there. I think currently it's another installation. I forget the name of the artist, but I might or might not check out a show when I'm there. But okay, so all that said, right, we don't know what companies are going to be showing off any big things, if at all, there, but we do know there's the Sphere, which might set the scene for some fun, I don't know, experimental or...
Well, it's funny because we're talking about CES as being such a huge thing, right? And then the pandemic kind of slowed everything down, and it felt like, as a society too, right? It was a society-wide thing of us like slowing down. It's like, okay. We were so focused on like crazy big news and all this stuff, all this super hyper capitalism, and we were forced to slow down. And now the Sphere appears like a sign from the heavens is like, oh no, we are not done with you yet, hyper capitalism. Okay.
And it's a lot of electricity, you know, consumption. Uh-huh. Anyway, to the actual topics of what I predict we will see. I mean, based on my inbox and everything that I've been pitched and, you know, the exhibitor list I've been looking at, I feel like, and you'll probably agree with me on this too, AI is going to be in everything even more than before. We're going to see like generative AI stuffed in all kinds of stuff, wearables, the humane AI pin, I don't think will be there, but like it's a portent of things to come, right? I mean, yeah.
Have you seen, there has been this ad on Twitter, Sherlyn, of people just being like, this thing is coming. And it's like blurred out video of like some sort of AI thing. It's the weirdest ad campaign I've seen for it. But everybody's
I'm not
just
on
like
Twitter,
on
so.
Oh, yeah. You're on Threads, where all the cool kids are.
Where there's no ads for now.
For now. But yeah, certainly not. I'm not too surprised by that. And actually, I will shout out my thing is that AI PCs, I think, is going to be the big thing we're seeing. We wrote up a piece, actually, contributed from a whole bunch of us, CS 2024, what we expect in Las Vegas this year. AI's PC has been a new phrase I've seen from Intel, from AMD, and that basically describes computers that have the new chips with NPUs or neural processing units so that they can handle some AI work. And that is a big shift. Like, these chips are not GPUs, they're not CPUs, they specifically handle background AI tasks. So things like blurring the backgrounds or doing some Audacity or Photoshop work. So that's a cool thing. That's different.
I mean,
you know,
it's different, I guess. That's what I was going to ask you when you started talking about this. Like, how we're seeing this obviously move over from phones into
You wrote a piece in 2017 exactly. about neural processing units, Sherlyn. Yeah.
No. I understand. I understand that. And I know, yeah, NPUs and phones, I can understand it because it's all like the ARM architecture, right? It's the like big little core and this sort of things. You're basically using the same sort of formation or design to have NPUs run more AI-oriented tasks. I just don't know that people on PCs are necessarily using AI tasks that much that they need a dedicated processing unit. Like, maybe are all like Bard and Bing AI or Copilot tasks, you know, run by the NPUs or no?
It can be like, no, right now, so, you know, Bing
That's
AI
what I mean.
does not need an NPU because it's just, it's doing
That's
cloud
regular,
stuff.
It's
dealing with neural units on the cloud rather than on your device. But if we want our computers to be more functional, right, the whole thing about like onboard Siri on your iPhone, getting a lot smarter on the Apple Watch, you need something to kind of handle natural language processing, things like that, like deals like that.
Our
phones.
Go ahead. I was just going to finish my thought, which is that like, I can see your point because I was excited for when Google brought generative AI to the Pixel 8, right? So it's the same idea that like you can run those things locally instead of on the cloud. But go on, sorry.
I mean, that's mainly it. But also on phones, like the neural units have been also powering things like image processing. You know, whenever you're doing like portrait mode, either on a Google device or an iPhone, like NPU is doing some image work. It's handling stuff like, I think the voice dictation is also relying on transformer models and neural units and stuff like that. So on PCs, it's not going to make a huge difference,
exactly.
But there are little things sort of like, I do really like the Windows Studio effects. And these are, when you're in a video chat, if you're on an NPU-enabled computer, you get the option to have like hardware-powered background blur, hardware-powered background replacement, the whole eye, like keeping eyes on tabs with people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can do that stuff without hitting your battery as much because it's this whole separate chip that can just like think and do these low-level background tasks. So that sort of stuff is cool. Intel announced it's working with developers from like folks like Adobe and Audacity to power AI features. There's Photoshop features that can just like optimize your image. You could do that by hitting the CPU a lot or hitting the GPU, or you could do that by hitting the NPU and kind of having maybe a different effect, or it'll be faster than the CPU. All these companies are talking about the overall flops power, the overall, you know, operations that they can handle in a second. And it's really the TFLOPS is how they're measuring it out. It is a measure of both the CPU, the GPU, and the NPU. So the NPU is like this other little thing that could kind of help you out. It's not going to change the world, but I do think if you're buying a new computer, you kind of want that AI PC badge or something like on it because you want to be future-proofed a little.
I agree. I mean, I think, yeah, you're right. Setting the foundation for like more on-device tasks on laptops. I think maybe so far we've been hindered, or maybe like development or advancement has been hindered a little bit by the fact that the machines don't actually have dedicated processing units to it yet. Like I can see, I don't know, right? Like I think for phones, I think they're better designed and better built to do more AI tasks anyway. Like the things you said, right? Like eye gaze, sure, but like yes, AI in photo editing, AI in like language models and understanding your speech and like building unique voice models. That's kind of why you want on-device neural processing units. So I guess if you're going to bring that to PC, you probably want those too. But yeah, it's interesting. Definitely look. We'll keep an eye out at CES. But it's not those like. It's not one of those things that is very visual, you know what I mean?
It's not gonna change the world, I think it's not, but it could subtly change the way people work. And listen, one thing tied to this is I wrote up a news post yesterday. Microsoft was excited to announce new computers in 2024 will have a Copilot key, a physical button on your keyboard that triggers Copilot.
Where are they gonna put it?
We've seen it on a couple computers so far. I've seen it on the Dell XPS, which we'll talk about a bit later, but It is like on the bottom of the keyboard, you have the two alt keys. It is right beside the right alt. So they're just like not the Windows extra control. What do you mean?
They're going to get rid of. So currently I'm looking at my keyboard, right? I have a control on the, all the way on the left, and then I have a control on the right as well next to the right alt key.
It could be. I have to double check my screenshot for the XPS, but I'm looking at my key right now, and I actually have two Windows keys. I have a Logitech MX Master keyboard, and there's a Windows key on the left and Windows key on the right, and somewhere in the right. One of those right keys will likely be replaced by a Copilot key, which is symbolically showing us Microsoft thinks Copilot is now as important as the start menu to them, you know? So, yeah, AI, all the things. And I forget if I mentioned my whole piece about, like, what Microsoft's AI vision is, but I wrote a thing about how I'm really skeptical of all that, too. So, you know, you're right, Sherlyn. AI, all the things is here. That's going to be probably the biggest thing we hear about at CES.
I'm sorry, I'm very distracted right now. There's about, like, half a dozen squirrels running around on the branches of a tree outside my window.
Well, you know what? I think the squirrels want to know what's going on with natural language processing. Okay, so looking at our CES preview piece, Wi-Fi 7 is something else that I think we're expecting to hear quite a bit about. I don't think it's as exciting as AIPC, and AIPCs aren't very exciting either.
Exactly,
but Sam Rutherford
yeah.
wrote this up. We're waiting for the spec to be finalized for Wi-Fi 7 early 2024. We're expecting to see devices and routers supporting it. It's going to offer maximum speeds up to 46 gigabits per second, over twice as fast as what's on Wi-Fi 6 and 6E at the moment. And it's going to offer a 320 megahertz channel that can double capacity compared to previous generations. So faster Wi-Fi, is this something you're thinking about, Trillin, on the mobile end at this point?
No.
No? Wi-Fi 6 has been so good. I feel like we're good for a while, actually.
Exactly. That's what I think. I think we're at a point where, like, you know, we're hitting the same sort of plateau we did with resolution wars on both cameras and screens, and that they're pretty good right now. I don't think we need that much faster. I think we got to a point where...
Yeah,
I think we also got to a point where, like, our needs are, like, what, video uploads and downloads concurrently, and they're pretty almost, not instantaneous. You're waiting, what, 2 seconds, 3 seconds now? As long as we can keep that up, I think we'll be fine. But
think it's less these days, though. It is less about, if you're thinking about Wi-Fi in your home, it's less about like what your one or two devices can do. And it's more about like what the 50 devices on your network hitting your router, pinging things. Like I talk to folks, friends of mine who have like 70 devices on their router. And it's being able to handle everything that is happening in your home and on your system at this point. But I will say, folks, like I'm not like counting the days until Wi-Fi 7 appears. I will say, if you're running an older router, if your router has not been upgraded in a couple of years, it is well worth getting a Wi-Fi 6 or 6E system. I did an AT&T upgrade where they gave me the AT&T Wi-Fi 6 router. They actually did a great job for expanding how far my network reached in my backyard and into my basement and other things. So that is a big leap, and those things are getting cheaper. But Wi-Fi 7 is coming soon, so... that's another thing we'll be keeping a look at. Daniel Cooper suggests that user-friendly solar is going to be another thing.
Like solar energy?
Big deal this year. Like solar energy. So like portable battery packs with separate solar panels to charge themselves. I've actually been seeing these at CES for a while now, so I don't think it's going to be like a bigger thing. But according to Dan, pop-up panels coupled with inverters and batteries that look like air conditioning units sitting unobtrusively in the corner are all the rage. And not quoting Dan now, I do think like people are looking for power options that aren't generators. Down here in the South, our power is not great. We often have like brownouts or weird outages during the summer when the grid is really stressed. And a lot of people have generators. But personally, I've been like, I don't want more gas. I don't want to have to like maintain an engine. If you have a generator, you have to like make sure it's oiled properly. You have to make sure it's maintained. It's a whole stupid thing. Give me a big brick of battery that I can charge over solar. We actually saw some experience with this ourselves when we were doing a video show. One of our listeners called in and they had their whole setup. They were based in Puerto Rico. This was right after a hurricane, and they were charging their computer, their router, I believe, like all sorts of devices, and chatting with us. They were charging over solar based on using outside solar panels, charging battery packs that was charging all their equipment. And they seem to be running just fine. So we saw it in action. I know Jackery is a company that's been focused on this stuff for a long time. I've seen it at CS for a while. So if you're looking for like outdoor battery needs or extra battery needs and stuff, solar's going to be a big deal. Battery packs for your home, it's not just like if you have an electric car now. Like, I do think people may start considering these things as like legitimate things to deal with issues with the grid. So it's not something you have to think about, Sherlyn. Like, you're in an apartment. You guys likely have a backup generator. Like, you're good.
We do, yeah.
But when you're in a separate house, it's a pain.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I would say my question about that is, like, how good are solar panels right now at, like, converting sunlight to energy that can be stored to? Like, there's several pieces to this. One is the rate of conversion and the rate of, like, how much time in the sun does you need to charge for, like, an hour of juice. Plus, also, how good is storage? I guess that's more battery technology. Yep. I don't know. There's a lot of questions.
There's a lot of questions, but I think we have seen this stuff for years, and every year it's been getting better. Solar efficiency has been improving year on year. Battery
capacity, even at the consumer level, like the down.
Yeah, even at a consumer level. To really get like really powerful stuff, you need a lot of panels. But I do think if you want like a little, you know, a thing that's portable that you could take camping or that can charge your phone or a couple devices, you know, you don't need that much. It's going to cost a lot because batteries cost a lot of money, but for that peace of mind, it may be worth it.
So, I absolutely think the idea of like a portable battery charger for my phone when I'm on the go is the best. Because I could forget to charge my battery sometimes, not just my phone, but the one that I take with me to juice up my phone, right?
Mm-hmm. Has anybody done like a magnetic solar panel for the back of phones that you could just like put your phone by the window and let it do the thing?
I don't know.
Hey, but startup idea, free one right here. Or if like it was a battery pack, but the battery pack also had solar panels, so it was like slowly trickling and you could leave it in a corner when you take it off your device. Hey, we're going to see a lot of cool solar stuff. The solar punk has been like a rising genre of like fiction and science fiction, and we're going to see like a lot of those ideas coming into reality. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. MEMS earbuds. These are earbuds using the new MEMS drivers. Micro electromechanical systems, maybe the next big thing in headphones, according to James True. Actually, no, this one is according to Billy Steele. And Billy points out, like, the first wireless earbuds that are using MEMS, the creative Aurvana. Mm. I hate this. Aurvana, A-U-R-V-A-N-A, Aurvana. Ace. These are using these MEMS drivers, and they're supposed to be they have solid state components. They don't need to be like tuned or trained as much as like older drivers. And let me see here. Next gen MEMS technology can have 40 times louder bass response. Right now they need like a secondary driver for bass. So MEMS is a cool thing. Maybe better technology for wireless earbuds. I'm down with that. Have you noticed like any, you're probably using a lot of buds at this point, Sherlyn, right?
I mean, I'm currently wearing buds while we record this episode, but I mostly use the AirPods now, and I know that's set, but I just want to say Creative is a Singaporean company, so shout out.
Shout out to, well, Creative used to be like the king of the hill, like Sound Blaster. Like I had a Sound Blaster on my first PC. I remember that was like a whole big thing. I liked their products a lot back in the day. Anything else you want to mention, Sherlyn? I know you wrote about, you put together this piece of what we expect in CS this year, did you not? Or were, no, you did the best and worst.
I did the best and worst.
This was Terrence.
This was like...
Anything you want to mention?
Right. So the piece of the what to expect kind of was like, let's get the team in to get, because it was, everyone's taking different briefings. Everyone's got different levels of expertise or areas of expertise. And so even though I didn't physically like visibly contribute to this piece, I had thoughts, obviously. I think my area of expertise too is usually in the like accessibility, wearables and health and fitness space, especially when it comes to CES. Obviously there's also like mobile and laptops, but I think we're so well covered on that front. I think we're always going to see more cars and TVs at CES.
Sure. Yeah.
I also think that last year I covered at CES this thing called the Displace TV, which is the idea of this truly wireless TV that I know that you've mentioned in this document.
I remember this. Yeah. Yes.
This Displace TV, if you remember from last year's coverage, is this thing that you like, this giant TV that you hold up and then you put it against any like surface on in your home, so a window or a wall, and you turn on the suction and it sucks itself onto your wall, and you don't need mounts. It's truly wireless, right? Like, it's also like wirelessly getting its signal from the TV box somewhere else in your house. And that same idea, the concept of like having no like cables, except for maybe a power cable, right? It was something I saw also a lot last year. LG had a TV that was supposed to be also kind of a wireless, with a base somewhere else that you're getting the signal from, or the processor was somewhere else, and the TV, the screen itself was just a screen. So maybe that, and then myself, I am looking forward to the weird, the wild. I'm already getting pitches about like all these different health and fitness things that, again, I'm just not too sure I can talk about. There is one thing that I am extremely excited to do. I think you can all look at the exhibitor list at CES and get a sense of what's coming. I do think this year, though, that we're going to see the most interesting things come out of the smaller areas that we don't expect. Things that you can wear, things that you can like, they're just going to be weird and wild, and it's going to be kind of fun.
I think last year there's a lot of P-tech. I think Dan Cooper wrote about all the like devices relying on pee detection and health detection through piss. So, you know, we can only go down from there. Poo tech.
Wonderful. Poo-tech. Going down it's from coming. Pee. Excellent.
Going down from pee. There was a scrub song about what you can learn from poo. Somebody's going to make a smart toilet thing that's just like, okay, it's just going to sit in the base of your toilet and detect what's in there. Yep. Yeah, I mean, that has existed, but also be in the water to detect everything. Listen, you heard it here first. It's going to happen. I do want to point out that displaced TV you're mentioning, Sherlyn. Mm-hmm. Billy Steele wrote up the update here about what we can expect from them and other things like this. The original displaced was a 55-inch. The displaced Flex has not been for sale yet. It actually went up in price since last year, so now it's $4,499.
Good job.
For a TV that sticks to your wall. You know what's great that I've been looking around in my house is just like, you can buy like a little portable stand, like a little thing on wheels, and you mount your TV to that. Mount your TV to that, roll it around wherever you need to in your house. It's great. You just have to deal with some cables there. I don't know.
I like that idea. I like that idea. Mm-hmm. For my bedroom, maybe.
For your bedroom, for wherever. People are always stressing about like how to mount things to your wall.
Exactly. You live in an apartment. Yeah.
You don't have to do that. I was in an Airbnb recently that had like the tripod, like the three legs sitting up to hold up a Roku TV, and that actually looks pretty cool. So you've got options out here, people. So okay, that's what we're expecting from CES. We've also already seen some news go live already. So like pre-CES news, I guess. Samsung revealed that it has three new Odyssey OLED gaming monitors, including two new sizes. So the original Odyssey OLED was a 49-inch super ultra-wide curved monitor. Now there is, I believe, a 32-inch with a 240-hertz refresh rate and a 27-inch with a 360-hertz refresh rate. People clearly want, like, as nice as it is to say, like, you have a 49-inch monitor, I think a lot of people are just like, just give me something that fits on my desk, please. So that is where a 32-inch OLED comes in. Or for the true gamers who want, like, the highest frame rates possible, they are really into smaller sizes. The 27-inch is a quad HD screen, so that's how it can get to that high refresh rate. But those gamers, those Twitch gamers, are not playing in 4K, right? They're not playing at super high resolutions. A lot of them are playing in 1080p or less to really crank up the frame rate. So it could be useful for them. I actually also wrote up last night, Dell has officially unveiled new XPS 13, 14, and 16 laptops. So the new XPS 13 is actually just the XPS 13 Plus from last year. They have taken drop plus from the name. They have just called that the XPS 13. All of these have the new Intel Core Ultra chips with MPUs. So they AI PCs.
Does the XPS 13 now no longer with the plus branding, does it have the like capacitive row of function keys?
It has all, it's the same. It's basically the same as last year. But what is really interesting is that I thought the XPS 13 Plus was fine, but it had some issues, right? It didn't have a headphone jack. It only had two USB-C ports. I didn't really like that trackpad. Just usability-wise, like I kept missing it. It didn't feel good.
Did they fix that?
They did not fix that in the XPS 13. But the new XPS 14 and the XPS 16 have headphone jacks. They have more ports, and they have micro SD card slots. So
and they
more
look
useful.
Nice. Like the, they do look, they have the plus
it's the same design.
It
is the same design, so they also have the disappearing trackpads.
Ah, okay,
you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah. But their keyboards are extra wide. I'm really intrigued by the XPS 14 because it is basically the size of the new MacBook Pro 14 inch. That's essentially what Dell is getting at here. These all have MPUs, so they're AI PCs. The 14 and 16 can be equipped with NVIDIA's RTX 4000 graphics, so you can get some GPU, you know, magic in there. And they look like I like the look of the XPS 13 Plus. I just didn't like using it very much. I do feel like the XPS 14 may be more of a better balance. But listen, when I was talking to Dell, I was in front of all those designers and I was like, let me tell you about this.
Yeah, I remember. I was there too, remember?
Yeah, you were there. And there was a lot of me just saying, why did you guys do this? Like, is this a fundamental usability issue for me? Even Apple, like Apple has seamlessly put its trackpad alongside the wrist rest and everything, but there's still like a separation. There's a slight border so you can feel with your fingers when you're on the trackpad and when you're on the wrist rest. I thought Dell was trying to be a little too fancy last year. I don't know if it's going to work out better this year. They did tell me that they added some tweaking features for the trackpad that allow you to adjust the sensitivity and maybe would fix some of the issues I had. That wasn't live for the review. So, okay. That's the thing we'll be taking a look at. Do you have any thoughts on these XPSs, Sherlyn?
My cousin was looking for a new one, so that's why I'm very familiar, because I was thinking, I remember we don't like the Plus model for some specific reasons, mm-hmm. and now that you've reminded me...
Yeah, it depends on the work they're doing. So the XPS 13 is basically the MacBook Air equivalent. The 14 and 16 are the MacBook Pro equivalent, so I do think the 14 is like a better balance of things. They all have dynamic refresh rate screens too, so they will look pretty good. They have some OLED options as well. I'm really intrigued by the XPS 14, so I'm looking forward to testing that out. Let me see here. Roku also announced that they are making high-end TVs of their own. So last year they announced their own self-branded TVs. Now they're making Pro Series TVs with mini LED screens. Okay. Again, slightly better TVs coming from Roku. They are clearly going after TCL, who they told me last year they were definitely not competing with. So that's kind of funny, where TCL is a partner of theirs and have been making Roku TVs from the start. Now Roku wants to do its own thing. And, you know, everyone becomes a frenemy, I guess, ultimately.
Yeah, I think
that's basically what happens.
Yeah.
Sherlyn, I think you were really excited about this one thing. You want to bring up the GE Profile Smart Indoor Smoker.
Excited is a strong word. I just wanted to defend it a little bit. I think that, okay, so the GE today announced that it is bringing its indoor smoker, it was originally dubbed the Arden. It was just a project, but then GE had a whole Indiegogo campaign for it, and it got like $800,000 in funding through the public.
That's not that much for a thing from GE. Things from like nothing startups raise millions these days.
Sure, okay. Sure. But there, okay. I mean, it's showing that there is interest enough to raise the amount of money. But anyway, so this is the first, or the GE Profile Smart Indoor Smoker. It's a larger than before countertop device that brings you the ability to smoke foods inside your kitchen without setting off your fire alarm. Okay. Now the reason, what, Devendra, what's up?
No, I said, okay. I'm just saying, okay.
Okay.
I do have a story about you and barbecue that I will relate to our listeners after this.
Okay, so I've actually had the good fortune of tasting some food that came out of this smoker because one of my friends who is a YouTube tech reviewer, I guess, David Kogan, he actually had one of these ahead of time and hosted a New Year's Eve party and made us some brisket with the GE Profile Indoor Smart Smoker. I think that's the name.
That's cool.
And it was, I will say, I walked into the home and I smelled everything, right? I walked into the apartment, I was like, oh my God, it smells like smoke in here. The fire alarm, never, smoke alarm never went off, but the brisket was delicious. And that's all I can say about it, really, right?
Okay,
like, it
okay.
seemed to work.
It's using wood smoke pellets to give it a sense. It's not, like, actually creating smoke. It is, like, using some smoke infusion stuff. But I do want to say, you got to go look at some pictures of this thing, like, on a countertop. This thing is huge. This thing is, like, the size of two microwaves stacked on top of each other. That's pretty big. For a countertop device.
Maybe it's big to you, Devendra. I think a size is relative, you know?
I think I have a bigger kitchen than you, Sherlyn, because I'm in a house. And even I would be like, no.
I would not buy it because I'm not a person who buys like a you know, and my air fryer is already taking up too much space, right? It's much bigger than my air fryer. You know, but I when you say like huge and you say the word smoker, I tend to think like grill, right? I tend to think a huge like a Traeger or something.
This looks as big as like if you were to take like the traditional like charcoal like the round grills and like, you know, put it on a countertop thing, it's about that size. Like I'm looking at pictures of like two racks of ribs being smoked at once on this thing. It's just big. It's just really big. I do want to say I do remember when we were in Computex at one point, Sherlyn, and we walked by one of the like Chinese barbecue places, like the places that basically dedicate themselves to smoking stuff and making the entire street smell of smoke. You did drag me in there immediately.
Wasn't it delicious though?
It was really good. It was really good.
I think this was the Beijing Heung you were talking about, the jerky place.
Yeah. The jerky place, yes.
It was so good.
It was so good, but also smoke everywhere. So even if you have this thing, your home is going to smell like smoked meat, which is a good thing or a bad thing, depending on what you want in your house and what you want from your clothes. Okay, this thing is kind of, I think this is going to win some sort of weird CS awards for us because it is like unique and it is like a thing that is going to exist. So that's cool.
Any CES booth that feeds me when I'm at CES feeds me some good protein. We'll have my interest.
Yeah, seriously. LG, as usual, also announced a bunch of news ahead of time and did not warn us. So I love taking briefings with LG and they're like, okay, we got all this stuff coming. I'm like, guys, dates? When can we expect this? Can I start preparing for anything? They're like, don't worry, it's a surprise. So yeah, they just started dumping news last week. They have announced a two-legged AI-powered robot that can watch your pets for you. What do you think about that?
So like a robot nanny for my pets?
Sure.
I only have a robot pet? So like, will my robot nanny watch my robot pet and they're all going to be friends again? Okay, great.
I'm sure some YouTuber is going to do this and make like a funny video skit about it and earn millions of dollars. Like that is, I'm sure that's
I wish
happen.
It could be me to earn them millions of dollars. Anyway, go on.
you could be on YouTube yourself, Sherlyn. In fact, you are already right now. LG also announced the Duke Box.
Yeah.
It is a tube audio portable speaker. It's a smart speaker that uses vacuum tubes, and there's a transparent OLED display on the front so you can see the vacuum tubes, but also there's a display on the front. And okay, LG.
Huh.
It's one of those things. There's no price.
Dyson and like nothing this, called, and they're like, what are you doing, bro?
What are you doing? There's no price for this thing because it looks ridiculous, and I'm sure some crazy audiophiles will totally go for this. But they are not giving us a price because I think this thing will cost like $5,000. So no thank you. Of course. I would also want to point out LG Display, which is not the same company as LG Electronics. We always have to make that difference. But LG Display showed off that they have an ultra-fast 480 hertz OLED panel coming to CS. That is more hertz than we have ever seen before. It's going to be a quad HD screen. Again, like gamers want those extra hertz to see those extra frame rates. And in competitive games, like maybe that gives you an advantage in something like Counter-Strike or Overwatch. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty high number. I don't know when we're going to stop with this stuff. I've talked to monitor, you know, engineers and people who are like, maybe 700 hertz. Maybe that is like equivalent to real life. So that's kind of like what we're kind of building up towards at this point. So any thoughts on the CS news so far, Sherlyn?
I wasn't surprised by any of it. I think it's our usual mix of like TVs and incremental generational updates plus weird fun robots. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's giving me a good like taste for this year's CES. And I, you know, par for the course, but I'm excited.
I mean, listen, again, I do wonder what kind of bathroom tech we're going to see. Poo tech is going to be a thing at some point, and we need a fun acronym for that at some point. I don't know. I mean, listen, P tech was a thing last year. Poo tech was a thing this year, or could be. Come on, I believe in it. Sherlyn, you also prepared our best and worst of 2023 lists, and I'm just wondering, you know, we don't have to go over everything here. You guys can go read the stuff in Engadget. Any highlights for you? From either of these lists?
I think the highlight for me is how many winners we were able to find this year. I think it is such a struggle to put together these because everybody wants to pitch losers. And this year we actually had a lot more pitches, I think, for winners. I mean, I think a big one is the Apple Vision Pro is a winner for me. I think I also, I crowned sort of open standards as a catch-all name for what I see to be more like Apple with USB-C and C2 and RCS as sort of a winner this year. And I picked them as winners myself, less because I think they're necessarily actual winners and more because they're surprises.
Apple meets standards. How about that?
Right. That's
like basic standards. Yeah,
exactly. That's kind of, I think, the headline we actually eventually went with, or the sub headline. But there's a lot of other winners in there. I mean, Sam pitched gaming handhelds and foldables. Actually, a few people on the team pitched gaming handhelds. He, you know, his also are like resident foldable experts. So he made a case that, you know, foldables won a lot this year. And we had a bunch of other, honestly, a bunch of other things I was pretty surprised by. I also had fun kind of ragging on some of our losers. I think it's pretty obvious.
The losers are fun to write.
They are so much fun to write.
Yeah.
I wrote about Amazon Halo myself just because I was pretty bummed when it went away, the Rise sleep tracker.
You may be the only person in America, Sherlyn, who thinks about Amazon's Halo products.
Like, yeah, maybe.
It's just you. It's just bumming you out. I'm sorry. I'm sorry it didn't work out.
And it was also nice or interesting for me to write or rag on Reddit a little bit as a loser this year. It was one of my losers this year. And I know, Devendra, you shouted out Surface's, the Microsoft's Surface tablet, actually, for being one of the losers, right?
I think so, because it does feel like Microsoft's entire vision around computers is just like, hey, here's another, we got the new Surface Studio laptop, the Surface laptop, or we did get a new Surface Laptop Go, but the things, the actual convertible tablets, were not really, they haven't been upgraded in 2 years. It seems like Microsoft is not even thinking about those. When I attended that whole device announcement thing, instead of more Surfaces, I got, hey, AI is coming to Windows. You know, we care more about AI, and that seems like Microsoft's big focus here. So the dream of the Surface tablet does seem like it's dying, to be honest. Aww.
It could be just also like, you know, hitting a plateau like we've talked about for a few other things. Like, you know, you don't need speeds and feeds. You don't need Wi-Fi 7. You don't need however many megahertz at the, more than a certain level. Maybe with the tablet, with the Surface tablet, it's getting to a point where it's fine. I don't know.
Fine. It's more like I never really see Surfaces out in the wild aside from when I'm going to a tech event where somebody clearly has like a review product that they haven't let go, or on the NFL where, you know, Microsoft had the deal and coaches have had those things forever.
One of my favorite games is to watch TV and spot all the like product placements from Microsoft.
That happens on TV shows all the time. I saw Surface Duos in TV shows this year, and I'm like, people who use those things do not exist. You're not a real person. Sorry. Maybe the dream of the Surface could be a thing if the Surface Neo actually came back and was a foldable. So if Microsoft took its time, was like, okay, we're not going to do like a weird hinge dual screen Surface Neo, but here's a real Surface foldable. Like, that is Surface moving forward. That could be interesting.
You're right. But do you think they're going to do that without Panos anymore? You know?
No, not at all. Panos is over at Amazon right now pitching. Yes. What about Halo. An Amazon Halo foldable tablet?
Yes.
Firefold. Oh my god.
Amazon Cortana. Name. No, I'm kidding.
Firefold is a very good name, actually.
Yeah. Firefold, and the fact that Halo is actually like a Microsoft thing too. It's just interesting to me. I've just made the connection only just.
Yeah, you just made that connection.
Very slowly. But no, Devendra, I'm curious too, like anything that you eventually, when you hopefully read the articles, did you see anything that stood out to you?
I think the things I brought up are totally legit. The Vision Pro, like you said, I think that was a pretty big announcement from Apple. And I do think, even though most people have not seen it and it's still unclear like how it's going to affect the world, I do think that's going to be a big deal. Like, Apple does not tread into these things lightly, and this is a 10-year plan for this company of like what they're going to do with computing. So I'm excited about that.
I tell you what.
And, yeah.
Sorry, yes. Go on.
Well, generative AI was a thing.
Yeah,
also
exactly.
Obviously.
No, I was going to say, I ask our listeners, you know, if you all read the articles or if you haven't, go read it. And then, you know, let me know if you agree with our list, really, or if you think we missed out on anything. I mean, it's difficult for me specifically when I look back on the year and I'm like, what? I hope I didn't miss anything. I mean, we called out, I think, Sam Bankman-Fried and all the Binance and FTX, all of that stuff as one of the losers this year. And that was something that, like, I wouldn't have remembered on my own because I'm so focused on gadgets sometimes. So, yeah, if you saw saw our stories and you think maybe something was missing or you fully agree with something, let me know. Podcast@engadget.com.
We would love to read them out. And actually, we had planned this a little earlier. We could have like had this better, but it's totally fine. Totally fine. I still want to hear what readers are thinking. Best and worst of 2023, but also, what are you looking forward to in 2024? Let's look forward a bit and let us know, folks. Let's move on to some other news. There was a new feature or a newish feature on Facebook called Link History that was getting a lot of buzz this week because people realized that it is another way for Facebook to track you and track your behavior, which is something they couldn't do as Google basically turned off ad tracking as part of their whole thing.
Right, third-party cookies thing, yeah.
Their whole third-party thing, yeah. So Facebook was basically locked off from tracking those things. So Link History is a feature that's been rolling out since the summer. It allows you to basically go back to any link that you have been sent or have visited through Facebook or Instagram. And I think the realization this week was just that it also means you're agreeing to ad targeting through Facebook. And that was a little unclear from people. So Gizmodo pointed this out. There was a lot of discussion around this. Carissa Bell wrote a follow-up for us saying, I think the story was initially people thought this was turned on by default. Mm. It's not. It is a thing you have to like enable. But I think when Facebook sells it, Facebook is like, hey, do you want to remember, you know, your links? Do you want this feature to help have us help you out? I think Facebook sells it as a way where it's more helpful and does not really highlight
pitching
like,
it
what
as,
it's going to
do. Right.
Yeah. So a lot of people may have turned it on and don't realize this is happening. It does look like it is very easy. You could go to your settings, browsing data, link history. You could flip that on and off on both Facebook and Instagram, it seems. So, yeah. The process is the same on Instagram. So if you're worried about this, if you think you turned on this setting, you can turn it off if you don't want Facebook to track you. Also, in other news, Apple Fitness Plus will spotlight Super Bowl halftime performers. So
yeah.
Is this something you've heard about, Sherlyn? I feel like you were talking Apple, yeah.
Exactly. I took a little bit of a explanation call. I don't know what to call it, really, with Apple. And yeah, I mean, Apple does this every year with Fitness Plus and a lot of its offerings. But this year, the update, nothing really, I think, groundbreaking. It added more time to walk episodes featuring El Roker or, you know, other famous people. Lily Singh is one of them who I think can be controversial. I'm not too sure. But the other things that were announced, I chose for us to headline or to focus on the fact that it's adding Artist Spotlight series featuring performers who had done the Super Bowl halftime show in the past. So starting next week on Monday, Rihanna's music will be featuring in new workouts dropped on Fitness Plus, the service. So there could be like a dance workout, cardio workout, weights workout, or that sort of thing with Rihanna's music in the background. Following that, we'll have series from Usher series featuring music from Usher, U2, as well as Britney B. And then other news around this set of updates as well include, I think the one is quite interesting. They're dropping a Time to Walk episodes. 50 Time to Walk episodes will be coming to Apple Music Podcasts. You have to be a Fitness Plus subscriber to be able to access them on Apple Music. But if you're not a Fitness Plus subscriber and you've been curious about some of these episodes, the Apple is making 10 episodes available for free on Apple Music Podcasts. You can go listen to them. I think the episodes will include those from people like Shawn Mendes. For some reason, he's the first one I remember. And others. Dolly Parton, I think, might be one of the free ones. There's
That'd
just like
fun.
A lot of...
Yeah, I remember that.
It's really fun. And I think the Time to Walk product's actually been a pretty nice, actually, a product. Like, by Apple. It's kind of a podcast, but really it's like one of these famous people narrating some significant moment in their life and describing the things they see while they go on a walk. And so if you listen to one of these quote episodes, you're basically kind of walking around your own environment and then listening, and as if there's a celebrity in your ear next to you telling you something about their lives. And I think that's pretty cool.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
So yeah, so you can check that out. And then some other things are coming, like golf-oriented workouts for people who are like, I don't know, golfers are looking to get into golf. So things that like help you, you know, target your back mobility so you can swing it in both directions a bit more, and then some lower body strength. I'm trying to see if there's anything else that I forgot, because like they tend to do this, right? They always do like 7,000 updates in one. And I'm just like, all right, so what are we? Oh, another thing is, they're adding a category to their meditation. So they used to have categories like inspiration, gratitude, sleep. Sleep was the new one added last year. This year, they're adding something called sound, where it's a meditation, but it's like it's more less narration than the others and more sounds. So like, you know, the like really nice Zen sort of music you hear in the background of any sort of meditation tape, right? And then the guidance is like, breathe in, focus on your body, right? I can't do this for this podcast. I need you all to be very high strung for this podcast, not falling asleep. So if you like the meditation, but you wish there was less talking, now, you know, Apple's going to be able to make a few more of those available. So again, if you're a Fitness Plus subscriber, great stuff. I feel like there's a lot of good stuff coming. And also, if you happen to be a Fitness Plus subscriber, as well as a Anytime Fitness Gym sort of member, there's a bunch of like integrations coming. You get some free months of Apple Fitness Plus if you're a gym member, or you get a free month of fitness, Anytime Fitness membership if you're a Fitness Plus member, that sort of thing. All the details are on our website. Go over to Engadget.com to check it out.
Cool. Are there any Fitness Plus things you're actually using, Sherlyn, that you like?
I always just forget. And I like, I like Fitness Plus. The problem is that I do forget. I like Time to Walk, Time to Run. Those are very easily accessible from the Apple Watch. You can use them. Time to Run, especially if you're like trying to get some motivation in your ear when you're running and your own, and you know, they increase the BPM along with the coaching voice in each episode automatically, so you don't have to think about like your own playlist of like high. And I know there's apps out there that do that, right? Like they do like 60 BPM when you're starting, but 120 BPM when you're like running at a sprint. I like Time to Run. I think Time to Walk is also very fun. I also really enjoy their actual workouts. I love the dance ones, especially since Apple Music and Apple have the licensing to so many good like songs for working out to. So I enjoyed all of those. And I really loved when last year they did BTS. They did a whole dance workout series featuring BTS choreography and songs. It was great.
It's, you know, I've been thinking about like doing like exercise subscription stuff. Fitness Plus, I did a bit. It's kind of cool. But again, I keep forgetting to do things.
Exactly.
I want to do more things. I also keep being like, I keep seeing these Peloton deals. And I think about how much I hate Peloton as a company and being like locked into a subscription to a freaking bike that'll be useless without it. And I know there are other alternatives, but I'm also too lazy to like figure that out. I'm sitting here looking at like Peloton has really tanked itself as a company lately. Like their stock has gone downhill quite a bit over the last few years. Basically, a ton from 2021, Peloton was at a high of $141, and now Peloton is trading at $5.81 with a market cap of $2 billion. And I'm sitting here and being like, Apple, you have more money than God. You could really just take up this failing company and just bring everybody into Fitness Plus. So Plus included Peloton. Mm-hmm, be like, oh, mm-hmm. Now that is something.
So when Apple was talking about like looking for a gym partner, right? Like the Anytime Fitness thing that I was talking about, you know, they said that, oh, they carefully looked at someone who's branding with, you know, Fit Theirs and everything. And I was like, oh, well, why? And I looked at Anytime Fitness and Apple Fitness Plus and I'm like, oh, they're both like AF, right? I'm like, oh, is that the sort of partnership you're talking about? Look, I think that Peloton, I feel like Apple is also very astute. I think they're looking at Peloton and realizing that that business might have run its course a little bit, unless they can think of like, Peloton now needs to pivot a little bit and I think to start serving gyms, not just consumer, because they've been serving consumers with like a certain, you know, wallet size for a while. And they're running out. Like those people probably buy their own gym equipment from higher end companies, the ones that have endless amounts of money, I mean. And then you're looking at the middle, like upwardly mobile, like upper middle class people, right? Those people already bought their Pelotons. They're good. They don't need too much more.
But yeah, there's still an open market. It's not like I don't think Peloton like absorbed the entire market is the thing. It's just that, I don't know, they had to like keep chasing. Their stuff is so expensive and the subscriptions are so expensive, and maybe they have like saturated the people who can survive that. But actually, as we're talking about this, I see stories now. Deepwater Asset Management, a Minneapolis-based investment firm, predicts Apple will buy Peloton in 2024.
Yeah, it might make sense.
Just looking at the money, looking at like we've all been talking about Apple's like ambitions for health and all sorts of things. Oh, yeah, I could see this fitting. And also give me a combined just give me a combined subscription. You know, I don't want to pay for a bike. I don't want to pay a monthly fee for a bike. But if it's like a all-encompassing service, which I know Peloton is trying to do, I'd be more down with it, don't you think?
I think it'll take a while for us to see this deal, if at all, come to fruition, because I think Apple is very nitpicky about its hardware anyway, like its quality, the accessibility of its devices. Like, Apple has a very comprehensive approach to a lot of things. Like, you still have it with the Vision Pro, right? So if Apple were to make a move in that space, it wouldn't be as simple as buying Peloton.
This would be a Beats move. Like, Beats is still a thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Beats is a part of Apple, but Apple's still making other headphones. So I would see it in that way, you know?
Okay. I mean, I could see it that way too, probably. But, you know, have we seen Apple do something like that since Beats?
Not since Beats, but Beats was like a rare thing for Apple. Like, I'm just looking at, we've talked about Apple's failure to get into certain health markets and stuff. Do we want to make this a 2024 prediction? Apple's going
to
buy Peloton?
Oh my God. Not 2024 for me. So there you go.
I think either Apple buys Peloton or Peloton dies this year. It is trading for $5, Sherlyn. You can buy Peloton shares for the price you buy a latte, you know?
I think another sort of fitness tech space team up. Maybe not Apple and Peloton, maybe like Aloe and Lulu, or like Lululemon and Aloe Fitness or something. Aloe Yoga, God. Aloe Moves, maybe. I don't know. But there's some kind of consolidation coming. I think
there's just definitely consolidation coming. Yeah. Like,
So that's the prediction.
Okay. Samsung also announced that Unpacked is happening January 17th. I hope you're excited about this, Sherlyn, to go right off of CES into an Unpacked event.
I have known about this for a while, and I have been exhausted already. And if y'all have been wondering why I've been so exhausted for seemingly no reason, is because I already know my January is going to suck. So, yeah, Unpacked is happening January 17th in San Jose, which is, I guess, you know, last year they did it in Korea, the second to last, I can't remember. Anyway, did it in Korea, now they're bringing it to San Jose. Great, thanks. We will have all the stuff, I think, you know.
You should just stay on the West Coast, Sherlyn. Like, you should
That's
stay
what I thought
Vegas.
About, but it's January 17th, and, like, it's a whole week away, and then, like, I fly back
Go
and
visit
forth.
Your West Coast friends, I don't know.
I mean, look, I probably will not be going to the actual event because we have people in the West Coast. We have a team of coworkers here who could potentially go on my behalf. We don't know. Unpacked is happening a lot earlier than usual this year. I mean, it's not the year like they did it right after CES. That was one year they did that. But it's definitely not February. I don't know what is better, right? Do I want to get it all out of the way by the end of
January?
I
feel like
January?
February would be better. Like, give us a break. Give us a breather. Sure. It used to be Samsung, like, would just announce stuff at CES as well. And that was, like, the worst, I do think.
Yeah.
It was consolidated, but it was too much at the same time. Unpacked
I will
is
say
happening.
pray for Sam, you know, because Sam's going to handle
pray for
a
Sam.
Lot of this stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Sam. We're expecting to see the Galaxy S24. It has not been 24 years. So did they make like
No. They did a name change.
Point?
Remember, they would jump from Galaxy S10 to 20. They
oh, yeah. 10 that. To 20. Yeah. That's what the deal was. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah. They wanted to line up the years, which is smart for them, because when I was thinking what model would be launched this year, I was 24, because
that actually
2024.
Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
The rare Samsung name change.
That was smart, yeah. Samsung, yeah. I give you a lot of crap for having too many product lines, but I will tell you, the name change to the match the year really made sense. Kudos. Good job, Korea.
Good job, Korea. We've got two fun stories just to wrap things up here, and I think they're still pretty important. Mm-hmm. A kid, Willis Gibson, he's a 13-year-old boy, has beat Tetris on the NES. He has become the first person to beat it, or at least achieve a kill screen that has been recorded about Tetris. So that's a pretty big deal.
I can't remember when I saw this story. I can't remember if it was when we were discussing it in our team Slack or when I saw it on Reddit. But I remember, like, seeing the picture of this person being so joyful that they've, like, beat it. And then another article someone else shared subsequently, really quickly pointing out the fact that it's because kids these days are having, like, more opportunities to play. They're able to, like, take the game with them to more places compared to before. And therefore now they have more time to hit the kill screen. Whereas, like, in my generation growing up, there were still wires. You'd be chained everywhere and that sort of thing.
I mean,
no,
Sherlyn, you are younger than me, and there were Game Boys, there were things, there were portable systems for those existed. But I think the difference is now is that I also hear, like, younger kids are less focused on like graphics and stuff, is the way that older gamers are, who want like all the FPS and all the 4K resolution and everything. And Tetris on the NES is a very basic looking game, and to do that and also stream while you're doing it.
This
kid streams as Blue Scuddy or Blue Scooty on YouTube. That's cool. He was able to get it there. Yeah.
This piece of news made me want to install Tetris on my phone, and also Snake again. Just want to play all the like lo-fi games again, you know?
The phone Tetris is not good from what I last saw, but I also feel like any of these like repetitive games is just like, if you want to trap Sherlyn in VR, you know, for the rest of her life, is just like put a headset on, like put one of the most basic ass games and you will
True
be there
facts.
Forever.
True facts. Yeah.
True facts. Also, you can now buy an Xbox Series S toaster for $40. Actually, it looks pretty cool. Looks like a fun little toaster. Does it actually make X marks? Yes, it does.
And also to pretend like you have an Xbox. No, I'm kidding. It doesn't actually look so much. It looks like a toaster with the Xbox design. I mean, I would get this, except for it's a single slice toaster. How dare they?
That is actually totally useless. The thing about toasters is that if you look at like wire cutter recommendations and stuff. Yeah.
I take this back. The picture made it look like it was a single slice toaster, but according to our post, it takes two slices, and it has 6 browning levels, an LED countdown, and a removable crumb tray. It also has bagel and defrost settings.
Listen, folks, if you're buying a toaster, you want a removable tray. That makes a huge difference.
Exactly.
It's so much easier to clean. But if you look at like buying advice for toasters and stuff, everyone, even Wirecutter's, like, they're pretty much all the same. Just it depends on what you want it to look like on your countertop. So this one looks
I will
pretty
buy.
Cool.
I actually think I will buy this. It's
really?
Only $40. It is it has everything I want. My current toaster doesn't even have the LED countdown. It has everything else. But not the LED countdown.
It is very cool. What I'd recommend for Lynn, I don't know what counter space you're working with, but apparently you were okay with that giant smoker ass thing. I recommend this to everybody. Get a toaster oven. Toaster oven will change life. Like it will just like I'd use it all the time because it's like I can like toast like multiple things for the kids and whatnot, but also I can roast a whole ass chicken in that thing. I could do all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
How long does it take to toast a slice of bread on that one?
It's a couple minutes. Like, it is about the same time as an actual toaster, but it's more even than any toaster because the heating elements are, like, better. They're just far better. So if you want, like, a perfectly toasted bagel, or if you just want to, like, make perfect french fries without heating up your giant oven, those things are so super useful. So that is my shout out. It'll make your life a lot better.
I've thought about it. I will quickly point out that Microsoft has made an Xbox Series X mini fridge in the past.
Yes.
I am all for 2024, you know, the Xbox brand just becoming a line of kitchen appliances. I would love it. Just bring
apparently
it.
The Xbox fridge is not good though. Like it sells for $200. I remember it was on sale for less at some point, but it can just hold a couple cans. Like it doesn't really hold that much, and it's not really
small. Right.
The refrigeration aspect of it is not even very good. So it's just a thing for you to have in your
Well, do better, Microsoft. You could have a whole smart appliance line with the Xbox branding.
So. Well, you know what? Listen, Microsoft has no clue to what it's doing right now. It's leaning all on AI. So if you tell them they can make an AI smart toaster oven, I'm sure they'll try. Copilot oven, coming soon to you. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. Sherlyn, I know you have some secrets for us. What's up?
Yeah, this one is not so much a secret anymore. I don't remember if I talked about Leave the World Behind, Devendra. Have I talked about
it? I feel
that
like
before?
We did. Okay. I gotta like look up our shows, but we did talk about it at some point.
In addition to that, I think this week I wanted to talk about. So I'll talk about the not so crazy one first. So Class of 09. Remember we were talking about Murder at the End of the World?
Mm-hmm.
So then after I finished that, my Hulu just auto-played and it played Class of 09 for me. And I actually found it quite interesting. Stars Kate Mara and a whole bunch of other people. I can't remember their names. It's about a class of FBI, like agent trainees or something. But it spans like decades and the story is told in 3 time periods, the past, the present, and the future. And it's basically following the future where like an AI legal system or an AI sort of policing system has been implemented and the sort of impacts of that. And then going through the past and the present, you see kind of how it came to be. And it's really telling the story of this one FBI agent who, you know, has been suffering the effects of this justice system that is, you know, based on racial profiling, that is based on all of these like inherently flawed things. He lost his father to that. And then he's the one who eventually in the future becomes this head of the FBI who chooses to implement this AI-based justice / policing system that mm-hmm. almost is Minority Report-esque, where they like predict what people will do before they even do it and then start arresting people based on that. There is a quite an interesting scene where a Tesla was stopped because it was not self-driving. They were like, why are you driving your Tesla by yourself? She's like, uh-huh. I like driving. Like, I like to drive. They're like, this is a problem. You can't drive your Tesla. Like, you're not allowed to. It has to let itself drive, which is interesting. Like, so I found that the themes of like AI and like the legal system and the repercussions of that were very interesting. It had some solid acting. The movie.
Frank Henry Henry's in there. So that's cool.
He's the one that plays the FBI.
The head of the FBI, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting series. Thank you, Hulu, I guess, for auto-playing it for me and got me sucked in a little bit. I will quickly shout out this other film that I saw yesterday and I threaded about this. Saltburn!
Oh,
have you
yeah.
seen it, Devendra?
I have seen Saltburn. I feel like I would have recommended that to you at some point because it's very much your style of like insanity. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's I watched not. It. I was told to. I was told it. I heard that it had like
If I could have done this, I would have like, Shirlin, next time you go to your family, make sure you sit down with your mama and watch Saltburn.
Screw you. No. Definitely don't watch this with the kids around or the old
or your
parents around.
Yeah.
Or your parents. Anyone you might be squeamish watching graphic content around, right? But Saltburn is about this scholarship student at Oxford who befriends a wealthy student and is invited to spend some time with the wealthy student's family at their family's estate called Saltburn. Again, I was told to watch this because it was like the depiction of Oxford or whatever is somewhat accurate or something. But okay. I was not prepared for what this show was going to be. I thought based on the description, it was going to be a fun romp in like academia, like
romp, yeah.
university
like,
story.
Poor kid gets introduced yeah. to rich kid and gets right. corrupted because of the rich like, kid. Like that's this typical story.
Right. It's been compared to what? Is it Meet Joe Black or what's that story that like another story where this guy is introduced to a rich family, this sort of lower income guy?
Talented Mr. Ripley.
Talented yeah, Mr. Ripley. Thank you. Yeah. So it's been compared to that, but it is like off the charts level of insane and graphic, right? So my first I was told to go and watch this show. Then I was like, never mind. I'm not going to watch it until like I feel like it. Then I saw like on Reddit, people were posting that apparently companies are selling candles that smell like Jacob Elordi's bathwater. And
sure.
I was like, that is
I mean,
a
the
weird
Alamo Draft
thing.
House was selling, I believe, bathtubs that you could drink from while you're watching
so
the movie.
So anyway, I did not realize that was going to be because of the film, because of the contents of the film. And that's not the only, that was the first time I said FFS. When I was watching, and this happens like
I wish I could have
half.
Seen this movie with you, Sherlyn, because it is so
Dude,
wild. Yeah,
I last night was this is when I watched it too. I was like, it went.
Did you watch it by
first.
Yourself or did you have friends?
I watched
least?
It by myself, but I was texting Aww, as I was going. I was like live yeah. texting.
Yeah,
and I went FFS once, and then I went FFS again, and then like near the end, like basically the end scene, which I'm sure you know what it is. I just go, what? I'm like my face.
Yeah.
It's to the point where I was like, I don't know that I feel good about this ending. So anyway.
It's not supposed to make you feel good, but it's interesting, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. I read an interview with one of the movie's producers or directors, and it's like you're supposed to be rooting for the like main character at the end. And I'm like, I'm not. I don't think I am. Very
I
interesting.
I think to a certain degree people are, show. But listen, not a good dude. Yeah. Kelton, Mr. Ripley is a good good comparison, but also hell of an experience. I do think Emerald Fennell is a talented director, to be honest.
I also think Barry Keoghan is a humongously talented actor.
He is so
Holy
good.
Shit. So good. So good. Very good. Rosamund Pike was amazing in it, too. I really liked her. I didn't know that Richard E. Grant was also in it. Just a love lot Richard, of like
great cast. Carrie ooh, Mulligan shows up for like Carrie 5 Mulligan. Minutes and she's great.
Yeah, had a short role in it. And
it's a the movie everyone's too. Talking about this year, you know?
Yes.
For a reason.
And it's only the start of the year. Like, come on. So yeah, Saltburn, if you haven't seen it yet and you're wondering what all the fuss about Jacob Elordi's bathwater is about, just go watch it. Come on.
No. It's on Amazon Prime right now, so you could see it pretty easily. But that is a fun crowd experience. So
very sexually explicit content. Watch it with your friends.
If you have friends who like crazy wild movies, it is worth doing together. Put it that way. Anything else, Sherlyn?
No, I just need a break now. I need to have a clean spa.
You want a clean spa? You want a full break? How about muscly dudes being sad?
No,
how about that?
Okay, all right, sure.
Yeah, I think you'd actually appreciate this quite a bit. Because I want to talk about The Iron Claw, which is one of the best things I've seen recently, which stars Zac Efron as the most muscle-bound we've ever seen him. He plays a wrestler. This is about the Von Erich family, which is a legendary family in the world of wrestling. Supposedly cursed family because of all the bad things that happened to them. I love this movie. I also think it's a great American tragedy because of the story of this family and everything that goes on. So it is not a movie that will make you feel good. It's a movie that will make you cry by the end, most likely. But you will see Zac Efron acting his butt off and also more muscly than you have ever seen him before. Great cast. Jeremy Allen White from The Bear is also in this. Also very muscly. He's one of the brothers. Harris Dickinson, who you just saw in Murder at the End of the World, he's the guy. He's her friend. He also gets muscly. Like, they're all in the ring, all doing stuff. It's all about this sort of empire of wrestling that their father, Holt McCallany, great actor as well, wants to build, you know, because the father was never as successful as he wanted. He thinks like he can build a great American wrestling empire with his kids, and it all ends pretty badly. It's actually pretty sad, but I also think
Me to watch that then?
You like sad things. You do like sad things sometimes. But it is a great American story of like the dangers of chasing success at all costs, you know, the dangers of the American dream. If you don't think about like what it means to people and how it affects people and how it affects your family. So I thought it was deeply moving. I love this movie, but it will make you cry. Like, you will see guys in tight underwear wrestling and then be like, why is everything so sad for them? It is so sad. So something you may actually watch though is Scavenger's Reign, which is a new animated show that's on HBO right now. This is like a TV version of a short that was originally on Cartoon Network a couple of years ago. It's about a group of astronauts who were traveling to another, like an interstellar solar system. They were in hibernation. Their ship crashes and they crash land on this alien planet where the entire ecosystem is just like wild. It's just really unique creatures. It's basically about these people trying to survive on this alien planet that has a fully evolved animals that have grown in their own like unique environment. And it's about them trying to come to terms with it. It's beautifully animated, I think incredibly well written, and just a really cool way of seeing like what a truly alien environment would be like. You know, I think a lot of science fiction uses humanoid aliens or uses things that we would somewhat understand. But what if there was an ecosystem that is just like beyond our comprehension? That is, you know, has evolved in ways we could not possibly understand, and how would you survive in it? That's what this show is about. I think it's really cool. If you really like science fiction, if you like world building, it's fantastic.
Well, that's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Mastodon, on Blue Sky. I'm also on Threads, but you know what? I have not made a single Threads post, and yet my numbers keep rising, Sherlyn. How do you like that? Not making any effort, but still getting clout.
Make my numbers rise by following me on Threads. I'm at Sherlynstagram, CHERLYNNSTAGRAM. That's also my Instagram handle if you want to see pictures. And you can always email me if you do not like social media. I am Sherlyn@Engadget.com. You can leave us your thoughts, podcast@Engadget.com. Write us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on all your favorite podcast platforms. Hang on. They were either fuck or hang on. They were fuck.
Yeah, squirrels.
And then hang on. And then another one attacked the other one. Hang on.
That's what happens. This is nature, Sherlyn.